My first girlfriend's last name was Dwyer.
Oh, for real? Whoa.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania.
That's crazy. I wonder if we're related. Well, most of my family's in like Michigan.
Yeah, so maybe not related, but it is interesting. I had flashbacks. I got broken up with on Valentine's Day, so
no way.
I'm gonna try not to subliminally hold that against you.
Oh my god.
No.
Hey, welcome to Creative Block. We're your hosts, V.
And Sean. We interview people in the creative industries about their life, work, and hobbies while we doodle jam.
We ask people on our social medias if they had specific topics they wanted us to discuss, as well as some drawing prompts.
Today, we have with us Jason Dwyer. Bing, 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 bing.
Hello.
With a little cat on his lap.
That's right. Guy's recovering, doing well. He's got a big orange kind of like flower cone right now.
Oh, yeah. You showed me the picture of that. That looks actually kind of comfy, honestly.
He's really taken to it like as a pillow. So I think it's worked. He came home from the vet with like one of those plastic cones, mm-hmm. and immediately like was able to sneak it off like in his carrier in the car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, we had to make the switch and he's taken to this one a lot better.
I used to draw this character called the Banished Prince, and it was this cat who had a cone of shame on. and it was like a sort of realistic cat head, but like cool warrior body. Do you draw your cats much?
You know, we can start tonight. I've drawn like maybe a couple of little ones with them. I think it's mostly just pictures because I'm like, oh, look at him. Click.
Yeah, that's so true though. I feel like when you're a student, maybe you like draw a bunch, maybe like the pets, and then like eventually you're professional and you're like, I don't have to do this anymore. I can just take a picture.
Yeah, you're right. Drawing your pets is totally for amateurs.
No, that's not what I mean.
That's what I said. You didn't even say that. We're just like putting words in your mouth.
This is the hottest take that Visa we've had NFT guests on, and this is the hottest take that V's ever said.
Yeah.
That drawing your pets is for students.
Oh, God.
Okay, so talking about being a student, I guess I'll ask you, did you go to art school, Jason?
I did. I went to an art institute, San Diego, one of the ones that's, I think they're all defunct now.
Really? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, like, or at least, like, they're not. Not all of them are working at the capacity they used to.
Does your degree still count?
I hope so. I mean,
I feel like some
I think,
of those schools, like the degree, like went away, like when they close, and it's like, wait, what? It's sort of like it feels like going back in time and like killing your father, and then you start disappearing. Like no,
no.
Like do I exist without this thing?
I should double check on that. I just assume we were all still good. I might have to make some adjustments.
Well, this is actually good to tell students because I don't know if a job has ever asked me where I went to school as like a like, hey, you can't get into this job unless you went to this good school or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I've only ever had to put that on in like a form when I'm applying out, and I assume that they're not even really looking at it anyways.
Yeah, I feel like the only reason you would ever like have to worry about a degree, at least in animation, is if you're an international person, where like, because then you have to do the visas and all of that thing.
You
but, like,
have to have it too. Yeah,
that makes sense.
But if you're American and like looking to work in an American show, then mm-hmm. it's not as, I think they just look at your drawings.
Do you know if it's the same the other way around?
I have no idea. I wonder. I would guess. I mean, it would make kind of sense that. But I think also the thing is that, like, after a while, at least when for visas to the U.S., after a certain amount of experience in the field, that is kind of more important anyway. It's like the degree, like, is less relevant than the experience you have. And then you can just, like, have your CV kind of like speak for itself.
Yeah, I think I know a few artists who like have got like an exceptional person visa, I think is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this person, they're just built different. We got to get them in here.
How shy of actually... a piece of paper that told that said that I was an exceptional person.
It's right? Actually, yeah, I got that visa, the O-1 visa.
You have one?
Whoa.
An exceptional person visa?
I know. It's like, but it's like, it gave me the most imposter syndrome ever, because you have to reach out to a lot of people and ask them to write down that you're exceptional. And it's like, imagine, like it's the most uncomfortable experience. Because you guys would qualify, because you guys have worked on all these, like, amazing shows. So imagine reaching out to all of your showrunners and asking them, like, hey, can you tell immigration that I'm, like, so great?
Man, that's really funny. I didn't think about those details, but I feel like I would just crumple myself up into oblivion, like in awkwardness, like just fold myself into eternity. So how many people did you have to get to say that you were exceptional, V?
Oh, you have to get around, I think they want something like 10. But
I don't know if there's 10. I don't know. I don't know if there's 10 that I can get.
I mean, hey, you guys, when you really want something, you like leave your, what's the word?
Your ego.
Your ego at the door. Yeah. You're like, I'm just gonna ask everybody, and if they turn me down, it's okay.
Yeah, sometimes you have to leave your ego at the door to get a piece of paper that inflates your ego.
I know, yeah. Right?
That's how it works. The first part of the process.
Yeah, if you in the in the comments think that I'm an exceptional person, I'm looking for 10 comments mm-hmm. to try to put on my visa.
Visa. Oh my god, where are you going? That would be so funny.
This guy's going places. Do they allow you to put that on your visa?
Oh my god.
He's going places.
All right. We got off track.
Yeah.
What was the one of the big things after graduating that surprised you in between going to school for this and like the industry? Like something that you learned pretty quickly or something? Rude awakening.
I learned pretty quickly that finishing school was not enough. I when I left, Amber, my partner, was already working in games in Dallas. Mm-hmm. So I moved in with them, and I just had my, like, you know, my portfolio I made outside of school, and I'm like, that's it. I did the thing. Cool. Jobs will be coming now, right? Since I've got a degree and I've got the portfolio.
Oh, and my gosh.
No, they did not. So, like, you know, and Amber was, like, very good about, like, breaking down the kind of reality of the situation, where it's like, hey, I think you need to think about, like, because, you know, when you go to an art institute, they kind of have you touch a little bit of everything. Like, you know, like a little bit of modeling, a little bit of editing, a little bit of, like effects, a little bit of storyboarding, and, like, a little bit of animating. And it's just, like, it's not...
A little bit of Monica in mind.
Yeah. But, yeah, just, you know... Monica, Sandra, and Rita, they don't make a cohesive portfolio.
Man, put that on my tombstone. That's a good saying.
That we need to steal that and make a shirt out of that.
Go for it. I think I signed away my rights when I entered the podcast, right? So it belongs to you now.
Yeah, we gave you very extensive contracts to sign mm-hmm. before you came in here.
Yeah.
First look into the creative club. Backstage, but that's so true what you mentioned, Jason, because I feel like that is such a common misconception. I feel like I had a little bit of that too. And did your school kind of encourage you and the other students to go for internships and whatnot? Or
a little bit, yeah, because like my arts institute in San Diego had good relationships, mostly with, like, majorly with game companies over there, because like, I don't think they had a relationship with, I think there's a Rockstar San Diego, some students went there, but I think a lot of that was them doing their own kind of like work, but the school had a relationship kind of with, like, there was like a Sony Online Entertainment there, and a Mad Catz was getting into developing games. So like that's kind of where a lot of students like would kind of go afterwards. And I think like we had some teachers with connections to Cartoon Network, so I actually did apply for a Cartoon Network internship and it was going to be on a generator Rex, and it was like me and my friend Chris who were up for it, and I didn't end up getting it, but Chris did, and like it sounded like it was a really great experience, but it's also like you have to make that drive. It's like a 2-hour drive, like sometimes more, from San Diego to like Cartoon Network every day.
Oh my
like,
god,
yeah.
Yeah.
So like that commute was like really killer. I was just like, ooh.
Wow.
That would have been rough.
Oh my god.
Was that your first rival?
No, not my rival. He was
Chris,
my
Chris
friend,
was
you know?
Your first rival, an enemy?
No, Chris is great. He does tattoos in San Diego. I mean, maybe probably in Tekken. Like that's his big game.
Oh my god.
Well, so that happened, and then you were like, oh fuck, reality check. I'm going to have to train, you know, 100 hours to... What did you do next?
Yeah, essentially, like, Amber, like, we're just kind of breaking it down with me. Like, I think you need to think about what you really liked doing when you were in school, and I think you need to make whatever you're looking for, like, your portfolio focused on that. Because no one knows what they're looking at when they're looking at this. And I'm like, you know what? That makes sense.
That's actually really sweet. Because did you both go to the same school?
No, Amber, like I think most of Amber's like school came from Watts Atelier, which I went to for a little bit, but like that's like a traditional like sort of painting school that was also like around San Diego, and that's where they went, and they were like kind of doing like book covers and like game like viz dev stuff. At that time.
That is so cool. That is so cool that you... And did you guys kind of like meet because you share like similar like art communities? I like to ask about communities because I feel like it's a huge motivator, right? Like when you're like kind of like when you're like a student, sometimes you need like a little extra push to keep drawing. So I guess my question is like, how did you guys meet, I guess?
Yeah, we met like online because my cat's getting up. But like we met online at a paint chat. I had been hot off quitting World of Warcraft. I sold my account, and I was like, all my friends were still playing, so it's like I had all this free time at night, and I was like, well, let me get back into this drawing thing a little bit.
How much did you make off your account before you get too far off this? People are gonna ask.
I think I sold it for like something like 800, like as when I was a teen.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Wait, this. Yeah. I mean, it was a. You had a lot of hours in it, huh?
Yeah, I was this was before I think any
800.
Of the expansions came out. Like I had all the like the at the time the like top end like raiding gear, and I was just like, I actually don't like this anymore.
Guys, don't go to art school. Just make World of Warcraft accounts and sell it. What are you doing?
But yeah, I just sold that. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna get an Xbox 360. I'm gonna get like an actual nicer like tablet pen at the time. Like it was like one of those Wacom like Graphire somethings. Yeah, and I didn't, you know, I hadn't like acquired Photoshop yet, so I just remembered like, oh, like whiteboards and paint chats. So I hopped in one and I started just like, I found one that was empty and started doing life drawing.
Oh, very cool.
And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna learn. And I think like in that particular paint chat, Amber was a mod, and I don't know, I was drawing like nude models from reference. I'm like, oh, maybe I think I was probably in trouble.
Wait, did you like get scolded by a mod and then rizzed your way into a relationship with the mod?
I don't think I think they goofed on me. I don't think I got like in that trouble.
Okay.
That would have been like, funny, like the enemies to lovers
situation. Yeah.
Oh, not
but
him
no,
again.
Yeah.
He's gonna draw naked ladies.
No, oh gosh, no, stop it. Wait. But he's so kind in his eyes.
So what if he has this pornographic fault? So what if he's a sinner? I mean, his technique is pretty good.
Yeah, like we just kind of met from there and like kept like talking over the years, and eventually like you met up at conventions and things just kind of blossomed from there.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's so cool that you guys were like giving each other advice for like portfolios and stuff. Cause I do feel like sometimes, especially while you were like mentioning like graduating from college, it can be kind of like easy to get lost at that moment in life. And so I guess my question would be kind of like, how long, like, what was it like for you when you graduated, and how long did it take you until you landed your first like industry gig from there?
Yeah. So like a lot of things I was doing out when I first got out of school was like, I was, you know, I did some kind of random freelance projects for, I don't even know how I ran into these people. There were like forums you could post at and be like, this is my work and this is what I've done. And there were things like that. And I think eventually I did like cleanup animation work on Skullgirls.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Oh, like, cool.
That was a lot of fun because I like love fighting games, and like the animators on that team were so cool. So to, you know, have a part in kind of doing the cleanup and like bringing those things to like the, you know, the visual like in the game you see was, yeah, it was
that's
really
crazy.
Cool. And like I had a really great time doing it. And that's eventually from there, because I did those cleanup animations, one of my teachers who worked at Sony Online Entertainment, they had this like a top-down like strategy game that was like sprite based. And like, so because I had done that, he's like, oh, they're always looking for people, why don't you do this? And that ended up being a pretty decent monthly gig for a while, like on this game called Pox Nora. I don't know, it was, I'd never heard it before, but it was like a lot of like kind of realistic like fantasy creatures, and there was like a card game and like a top-down strategy element. It was kind of neat. And it was a great like experience right like out of school, because I would just like get my assignment in an email, and then I'd like send them an email with all my stuff, and then I'd have enough money to pay rent.
That is awesome. Did you get any like drawovers or anything, or was it just kind of like, all right, sending in this into the void and wait until the next assignment kind of deal?
That's exactly, it was kind of just sending something in the void. I'm like, I guess they must like me because I keep getting these every month.
That's so crazy. Oh my god. And how is doing taxes for this? It's like, did they give you like a, because like we're close to tax season, so it's on topic. Mm-hmm. It's on brand.
Yeah, they still send me like a, like I think I like was still getting like, you know, the freelancer form. So like I would do that and that'd be fun. But I was like, I was in an apartment with four other people, or like three other people at the time. So I'm like, yeah, you know, I can make this work.
That's so crazy. And so how long did you do that for? How long did you do the
I want to say Skullgirls was like, because I was doing Skullgirls while working at SeaWorld a lot of the time. I feel like I was doing that like also while finishing up my like last year in like college.
So just coming in absolutely drenched.
Yeah,
from being in the splash zone. No, you just slip and slide around. That's it. I didn't have anything important.
Yeah, essentially. I was like, I worked in like one of the rides where I press a button, it goes up, and hopefully nothing wrong happens. And if it does, I have the training of what to do.
Oh my god, that is so scary though. Oh my gosh, do you feel like that helps you maybe like down the line to like manage the stress that comes with being a board artist?
A little bit, probably. Like, I'm glad that nothing ever went wrong, but you got to be ready for something to go wrong. Gonna crash, or Photoshop's gonna crash, or Storyboard Pro's gonna crash.
Yeah, what's your protocol procedure for when a scene breaks, and how did you apply your SeaWorld ride experience to becoming a storyboard artist? Mm-hmm. This is for the clip.
Yeah, you just immediately, it goes down, immediately call security.
You need revisions? Security!
Mm-hmm. And then you get the rope ladder and you get all that stuff.
Honestly, though, it's like if like your file crashes, IT is kind of like security. It can be like, help.
Please help. Please.
But I feel like Storyboard Pro is such a weird program that I feel like you just need to talk to other board artists. Like, I don't think IT can really do anything most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, you just gotta pray that your last previous save or your autosave is there for you.
Yeah, I feel like there has to be a graveyard somewhere of unsaved work. Like all of the hours and hours and hours of lost work storyboard work that is floating around somewhere, like collected someplace, you know?
Mm-hmm. Just all the art that's just never been seen, episodes that were just right. a little bit different.
It's like it's like heaven, but for Photoshop, for Sora profiles. Just like little bits of scenes, like.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, I mean, maybe the same thing can be said about like scenes that get cut, like it, you know, like they've gone to the great cutting room floor, you know, where the place where you killed your darlings, like where did the darlings go?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Oh my gosh, that's so funny. So you were working on Schoolgirls, and then you worked with the Sony gig, and then eventually you were like, okay, I got to redo my portfolio, try to get the gig. How did you figure out you wanted to do storyboards? Like, how was that process? Or like, what was that process like?
I think it was just like, that was, I had a good time with it. And I was like, really thinking about it, like, I think this is the most fun part of drawing. Like you get in and you do a little, like you figure out the whole drawing, and then you don't gotta do all the other stuff that takes a long time, like rendering and all that.
Your storyboard artists are lazy.
No. But it's like you do a lot of that. Yeah. You do a lot of it. You just do a lot of like the fun part of drawing. So if you have the endurance, and I think I do, and that, so that like appealed to me, is like, I think, because like any art job is like, just it's difficult. So you got to like think about like which one that you got what it takes to kind of like handle the stressful part of it. And so, because like I think like, oh, this is like, I'm doing a lot more of like, you know, a lot of the fun part, I think I can deal with the endurance needed.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Honestly, I relate to that a lot, because I feel like I'm also just kind of like, I don't, for the longest time, I feel like doing an illustration is so, what's the word, like, it's not scary, fun, but like, cool. Awesome. It's fun, cool, and awesome. But it's also kind of scary. It's kind of like anxiety inducing. Because for me, for the longest time, I wasn't good with color. Mm-hmm. My inking was just okay, and I was not good with backgrounds.
Everyone that follows V's art is rolling their eyes right now about V being bad at color.
Listen. I had to like learn color, like for real. Like I like studied it, because for the longest time I was just doing like black and white. Yeah. So I do feel like boards are like a great way to kind of like finally be like, hey, I have some skills. I don't know, you know, I don't know.
Sure.
It's mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. When you're like a little bit insecure about your art, I feel like boards is like a great way to kind of be like, not be too precious with your drawings. So
hey, only do sketches. How about boards?
Yeah. But yeah, no, that's so cool that like that was kind of like the thought process, like, okay, what do I enjoy doing? And so what was your portfolio like at the moment when you realized like that you wanted to maybe do boards? Like, did you already have some boards? Did you have comics? Like, did you have to make a bunch of boards from scratch?
Yeah, I only had like one board from school, so I needed to like, I needed to get in there. And so I started taking classes online, which was really cool. I went to CGMA. And I think like there was a teacher like Scott McLeod at the time who taught at who worked at DreamWorks, who taught, and that was like
Scott McLeod. Is he? No, I'm confusing him with another cartoonist. I think I was like, is he the guy that wrote Understanding Comics?
Oh yeah, man. Oh gosh, maybe I got the name wrong.
That's the guy from Highlander.
Yeah, but it was a name like that. Like, gosh, I wish I remembered right off the top of my head, but. It was a really great class. He's a really good teacher. He's probably busy still working in feature. But yeah, I did that class. And then I followed that up and I did the Rad How To School at the time, like Rad Secrets.
Oh, you did? Nice. Oh, can you talk about that a little bit? Because I feel like I have recommended that program to some people who are like, oh, what should I do? I don't know if I should like... do a college, or if I should focus on like an online course, like a more focused online course. And I usually recommend Rad How To School, but like I've never taken it myself, so I would love to hear from you who's taken it.
yeah, so that was really great, because it was really like, it was truly like focused on boarding, like a rad like broke everything down in a like a really easy to understand way. And at the time, like, you know, I was still doing, you know, I was still working at Sony. I was like still living in San Diego, and it was like, oh, this is like these online classes are great. They're accessible, and like, you know, he looks at your like, you know, everybody's board got looked at when you did your assignments, and like it helped, you know, I think really point me in the right direction. And when I eventually got to meet him at CTN was when I got the advice, like, okay, so if you're serious about this, like you need to think about making the move to LA at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. That's so interesting. So what year was this? Just to kind of like.
God, I think I want to say that like this was the 2012 CTN, I
Okay.
think. Yeah, and then we moved to LA around like 2013. Like, or I think early 2013 or late 2012.
And both of you guys were like, both you and Ember were like, okay, we're gonna do the animation thing. Or where I was Amber already doing animation at the time.
Amber was at the time like still doing game stuff, like, and still
Okay.
was and was able to work from home like already pretty comfortably.
Oh, that's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, so like before that was even like just such a focused thing now, Amber just kind of had something going. And then eventually, like, I think after I got into animation, Amber was able to pivot over as well.
That is so cool.
Because like, you know, Amber's like really, really good. It's just
Yeah, we need to get them on the pod eventually. Hey. That is so cool. That is so cool that like Red that you got to meet him and like did he ever did you ever get any like or any recommendations from him or like did you ever like take a test for one of his shows?
You know, I did not. Like, I think as soon as I got into Cartoon Network, I was just there for so long.
Yeah, because you got a. So, what was your first show at Cartoon Network?
Yeah, the first show I got into was the second season of Clarence.
Hey, that's
Yeah,
awesome.
I love that show, and I the like it was a lot of like people starting on the second season at the same time, so everyone was like really excited, like, you know, meet each other and like hang out and get to know each other. So like the vibe was like great. It was a really wonderful first experience.
That's almost like a season one almost, because if the crew was all new.
Yeah, like I mean, there was still like, you know, a lot of people from season one, but like there was just like there was a like a basically like it's like think like another like class comes in, like a new freshman class. And
I
like
see, I
that's what
see.
I felt. I was joining with like a new kind of freshman class of like people, because I think a few of them had like come from, you know, different spots. Like I think like Mark Galez came from like feature, like
Oh, that's
over,
right, yeah.
yeah.
Shout out to Spencer Rothbell, who we interviewed on episode 111,
Yeah, Spencer rules.
head of story. But yeah, I love Spencer. Shout out to Spencer.
Yeah, Spencer and the team like from season one, like it was a really great environment on season two. Like I love it. I'm really thankful that I was able to be like a part of that.
And so can you tell us a little bit about like what was it like taking the test and like a little bit where like your head was at? Like was it stressful at all or like was it did you kind of like know what you wanted to do? Like tell us a little bit about the tests or and what that was like.
Yeah, the test was like a pretty like reasonable length. Like the boys find like an anthill, and they like find some like I think it was your choice of like what objects they have to like try and mess with it, and that was like a lot of fun. But it was like also I think like I just got in, so I'd only done like a couple of tests before. I think that so I was just like, you know, when you're those early first kind of couple of tests you do, you feel a lot of like, oh God, oh geez, who knows if I'll get this chance again. I hope it works out.
Was it a storyboard driven test?
Yeah.
So, and I mean, and it's a storyboard driven test on top of everything else. I mean, that's an extra layer of, I think, challenge.
Yeah. So it's just like, God, I hope they think I'm funny. Go
That's
ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I think that's what's so scary about doing tests for board-driven shows is that like you're literally putting like you're not only do you have to draw, but you also have to like know how to write and be funny. And that's so scary to be like to think like that they might just look at your test and like roll their eyes or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, this like person's another, just good at drawing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I think I've said it a few times, like, I've been funny enough to live so far, so I hope I can keep it going.
What advice would you give to somebody taking a test like that, where you have so much leeway and so much freedom, and you're, like, pitching gags, and, I mean, it's a level of constraint, like, the constraints are taken off so much on a test like that. What mindset would you advise someone to get into?
For me, like, what I ended up doing, like, because it's like, once you start drawing and once it's drawn, like, the question of, like, oh god, is this, like, you can't tell what, like, once it's drawn, I don't know if it's funny anymore. But so it's like, you really got to hold on to, like, this made me laugh in the beginning, so I think it's still good. It made me crack up a little bit. I maybe told like one other person like the bit and they got a little giggle, so I think it's going somewhere. So it's like just trying to like have faith in those kind of first initial like laughs you give yourself or somebody you feel confident enough to like share like what you're trying and just see it through.
Do you remember what your solution for the scene was?
God, I think,
or what joke you pitched?
I think I had Sumo. I think they found one of those like recorders, like those like awful sounding recorders. I think I had
like
Sumo
a yak
like
back or something.
Yeah, not no. It's like it's not a. It's like a little flute, but it's called a recorder. I'm trying to remember what they were called.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
So they found one of those and they were messing with it, and I think I tried having Sumo like play into the anthill, and Jeff didn't want him to like disturb the ants.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I you know they end up like wrestling and getting into mischief.
What song? What song do you think ants? Do you think ants would like?
I bet they would love like some kind of ASMR.
True.
It's so just
whisper
love
song by the Ying Yang Twins.
Mm-hmm. Like just a half-eaten fruit being blown in the wind ASMR.
That's awesome.
Yeah, abandoned picnic ASMR.
Abandoned picnic ASMR. That's really funny.
Abandoned picnic ASMR club hits. Yeah, it's it's very soft, like just like really, really low bass, really, really.
Man, that actually sounds like a song I would probably listen to when I work out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I like all my music to sound like it comes from like two doors over, where it's just like very distant bass.
Yeah, just, neighbors, they're having a party, but they're being a little bit respectful about it. It's not too disruptive.
Oh my gosh, I feel like, yeah, I don't know, I was gonna say something but it's so left field and I'm like, all right, no, that's good. I want to get back on track. Mm-hmm. I think it's so funny that you were like, you had this, so how long would you say it was that scene? So you came up with that idea, you pitched it to a couple of friends, and you were like, okay, this is getting a chuckle from me and from some people I trust. How many drawings would you kind of like can't guess would go into a test? Like, because I remember taking a test for Cartoon Network and they're like, don't do more than 60 drawings, which actually sounds like a lot, but it goes really fast.
It does go fast.
And I remember at that time, like, I'm going to keep it exactly 60. Mm-hmm. I don't like because I don't know, I'm like, they mean it. I don't know.
If I go too little, they'll be like, this person's a slacker. Oh no.
Exactly. Yeah, there was that end. It's like, oh, if I do too little, it's like, oh, he don't care. And if I do too much, I'm like, oh, this guy thinks he's something. So it's just like, yeah, I got to follow the exactly to the T what they want from me. Because I don't know. I just got here.
That's so funny. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did they have any other, like, because I remember, Sean, you talked about the test for regular show that had, like, a little extra bit of, like, okay,
writing.
Like, writing, like, he's gonna cut a hedge into a certain kind of shape and what is gonna be the shape, or like, I remember when I took the We Bear Bear test, there was a moment when they were like, oh, we'll come up with a couple of like one drawing gags of like how they're trying to get the attention of the sandwich person, like the sandwich maker person, and yeah. Do you remember if there was like anything like that, like anything other like little extra, or if was it just like just that one specific prompt?
I'm willing to bet there was, because there definitely was one on the Craig one, which was like come up with your own like Creek Kid. And but
Mm.
I don't quite remember what the Clarence one was anymore.
Yeah, what's been your favorite test? What's been your favorite audition storyboard test that you had to do?
I think it definitely was the Craig one, because like the hey, come up with a Creek Kid at the end was like a lot of fun. I think at the time what I landed on was there was these like at the paintball kids who like had a paintball war. So the kid I came up with was like a press, like a field photographer for that conflict.
Oh, that's really funny.
Oh, that is funny. That's a cool angle. Yeah.
It's like he's doing it for like school, like this like AP journalism or something.
Yeah.
How long were you on Clarence? Like, was it just a, because I think the show was, how many seasons did you get? Like 3 seasons?
Yeah, I got 3 seasons. So I was on, I think, like till 2017, like just the beginning of 2017 is when it ended.
So how is it like when the first show, what, so you worked so hard to get on a show, finally you get the show, you're so excited, you're so happy, you have all your coworkers, and then you get the news that the show's over. Can you tell us a little bit about like what that's like?
Yeah, I think it's a bummer, like because we all really like we were on it because we really liked the show, so it was rough to say goodbye. And I think it's just like that when that first show you're on ends, it's like kind of devastating a little bit. But you want to keep working, you gotta like keep looking for the next thing. And at that time, there was a lot going on. So I
That's
think,
true.
yeah, like so when that ended, I was doing, I think, freelance boards for like a couple of different shows. I think at one point I was doing like three different freelance boards, which
What are you doing?
what am I doing? I don't recommend it. But it's,
Wait,
yeah.
three different freelance boards? That's crazy. At the
That's a
same
lot of
time.
work. Yeah, like, well, it's just like things like line up in a way where like, okay, this one's on cleans, this one's like on like thumbs, and like
Yeah.
it's just like I wasn't quite sure, like I had gotten one show, so it's still like is this a fluke? I don't know, I don't know what I can secure or like how secure what is coming next is, so I don't know. I tried a bunch and
Yeah, I feel like the challenge of going from show to show is often not super simple, or even freelance to freelance. Like people on the outside might it to people on the outside it might look like you're just working fluidly for a while, but usually what ends up happening is you have one job and then you start another job halfway through that job or at the tail end of that job. So at one point you're working like two, and then like in order to make sure that you don't have gaps in your work, you like say yes to multiple things that are staggered, and that can be very hard.
Yeah.
How do
Yeah,
you
because you don't
balance
know which one is gonna
that?
like turn into a full-time gig.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And
How do you
so it's
balance
just
that? Or how are you time managing that?
one of those things where it's like, there's these there's it's just too much coffee, and just making sure like I'm being efficient, I guess, with my drawings. It was one of those like when I start bored, like for anything, what I do is I call it's just the ugly thumbnail phase, where I try to get as much done as I need for my section of the board, like with what's immediately in my head as quick as possible, with really tiny ugly drawings, just so I have at least it start to finish, I can see it. And then from there it's just a lot easier to go and like just hit the ground running. And I think it's like that was like the first time I kind of did something like that. So I do all the like ugly thumbs, and then I'd like spread them out in the like Storyboard Pro board file, and then I'm really motivated to get it done because I also don't want anyone to see those ugly drawings. So it's like I'm like, you know, kind of like crossing them off and eliminate them as I like go through. I was like, okay, all right, no one has to see like these things.
I go back and forth sometimes, because sometimes the thing that gets me to move forward and propels me is allowing myself to do drawings that are making me laugh. And it's hard for me, it's hard to do that with like the quickest possible really, really ugly drawings. Mm-hmm. How, when you're working on something funny and you're trying to get ideas down, do you ever run into that where you're like, I want to see whether this scene looks funny enough to even keep in or whatever?
Yeah, and that's and like once that kind of spot is done, like I will truly jump around at any point in the board to like what feels like I got a clear vision on, or what it, like you said, okay, like it's funny right then. So once that whole thing's down, I jump everywhere, and I think a lot of the times like my board will not make sense until it's finished, because gotcha. I've just hopped around so many different spots in it. I feel the same. It's you want to hit the ground running on the things that like are immediate in your head and funny, like as soon as possible.
It's so messy. Boarding is so messy, and it always feels like a shit show until the very end. It feels like you're one of those guys that's like you're trying to solve a case, and there's papers all over the floor, and there's like string on your board, and like it doesn't come together as anything that makes sense till the end, and you're hoping that the police commissioner doesn't swing by and look at what the case looks like so far, or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And it's actually... Oops, sorry. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, and that's what the really ugly drawings are, like their insurance, that they're at least like some thread sure. making it all connected at some point. But yeah, sorry, you were saying...
No, I was gonna say, it's actually really interesting to hear both of you guys like working in a very non-linear way, because I feel like there's like two types of board artists. There's like the linear kind and the non-linear kind. And for a very long time, I was only doing my boards linearly. So I was just doing like a shot per shot, like literally following the board, the script or the outline, and just translating that into, but I feel like with experience, I've learned to value the non-linear way of boarding a lot more, because then you start from the bits where you're the most excited about, and you can flesh those out like really well, and then you kind of just kind of fill in the gap. And mm-hmm. so there is
sometimes it's about the sustaining your motivation too, like encouraging yeah. yourself. And if you can give yourself a goal that you're like, oh, that scene turned out well, I sometimes that helps you in your next scene, at least for me. Sorry to interrupt.
No, I was just gonna say, I think it's just like it helps with pacing as well. I feel like sometimes when you like board linearly, you don't kind of flesh out the moments that you're excited about as much as if you were boarding non-linearly. But that's just kind of my personal observation on that. And I mean, I don't know. Have you ever tried to like board linearly, Jason?
Yeah, I think a lot in like in the beginning is how I did it. And I think I switched to like the non-linear method when I realized, oh, this is going a lot faster, because you're not, you know, you're not hitting any of those roadblocks as often. Mm-hmm. Kind of, especially when you're doing like board driven, where you're solving story and like comedy stuff as you go. So like, because I'm not getting held up at the roadblocks, and I'm just kind of like hitting things as they're like clear to me, and it's also giving me time for those stuff that's difficult for me to like kind of solve in the background of my mind, or kind of figure out as I'm doing another scene that it connects to, you know?
Yeah, I love that. I think this is like such great advice, and it's so great to be talking about it, because I feel like the very first time I got exposed to that kind of storyboarding method was very late in my career. I mean, very late, mm-hmm. at least halfway, you know, which feels like a very late time. Did you just kind of figure it out by yourself, or were you just kind of like comparing with other people's like way of working? Like, how did you stumble on it?
I think I kind of like came to this sort of conclusion for me, because a lot of my coworkers at the time were, like, they would with their partner work out a script beforehand.
Mm.
And like, I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, because that makes sense, where it's like, oh, you have the script written out, like you've collaborated together on that, and then you can just work from there. And so like I like I don't know, I feel like I'm always like I don't know if I always like I'm worried that I'm not drawing fast enough, so I thought like I need to get into the drawing portion as soon as possible, and then like I can solve it from there. So I think that's where that kind of came from, because I think I was always worried if I did the writing like it all out method, I wouldn't have a lot of time to draw. But everyone else like who did that, like man, they had good results. So I don't know, I'm thinking about like next time I'm in that sort of position trying that.
Well, I think some people would argue that the writing goes faster unless you are a slow writer, which is also okay. You know, I feel like I'm a little bit of a slow writer, so I tend to agree with like a little bit of a hybrid method, like maybe like loose thumbnail outline. I've worked on regular show. We would do sort of and break it down beat by beat out like outline style, and then write in like possible lines that could be there, and then we divvy it up, and then you could change it however when you actually get into the drawings for what makes sense. But on my own, I think that I sort of do a mixture.
A little bit of script, a little bit of
A
little bit
I
of
also
everything.
have found that like if and this is a different way of working, doing a radio play, like just with scratch audio, just hearing how the lines are said to one another, or even just like not thinking about the lines too hard, just like laying down how the characters might talk to each other, even if you change like every single word of the lines, like hearing that sequence sometimes can help too. There's a bunch of different ways to do it, I think.
Yeah, that's what's fun about this job is there's like, you know, so many ways to approach it, and yeah, it's I think everyone kind of goes through their own professional journey is finding out what works for you. Is like as long as you're all kind of like arriving at the same place, which is a finished board, you know.
Which is like really interesting that you mentioned that because it is both fun, but it is also like, have you, especially when you started storyboarding, have you ever felt like kind of crippled by the sheer amount of possibilities, you know? Like,
Yes, which is another reason why I do all those like thumbs in the beginning, because I hate a blank page. It needs to get messy as soon as possible.
that's such a good way. That's such a good way to approach it because I do feel like a lot of students or people who are like learning boards, they're kind of like, well, how do I go from a script to a board? And it's kind of like, yeah, that's true. Like, how do one person do it? And it's like you have to take like such a leap of faith when you kind of start doing the boards because there's like literally nothing to go off from except like some words sometimes. Because sometimes, like you guys were just talking about having to write the words too.
Words can be tricky, but the nice part about it too, especially like in a board-driven show, and I'm sure it's like the same on other things, is like when I've gotten used to the job, and like there's something reassurance is that it's a very collaborative process. Once the board is like pitched, you know, you're in there in the writing room like with like a lot of the story team, and like sometimes like even like a like other members of the team to take a look at things and like pump stuff up and like bring something like, you know, bring some of their like sensibilities and humors to it. So, and getting to that portion is really exciting because like, I don't know, that's always like the funnest part is like everybody in the room like making each other laugh and like making sure that everybody's board kind of becomes the best possible like version of itself.
Yeah, talking about pitching, how was it like for you pitching the first time?
It's
Were you
I
scared?
feel yeah a little bit, and I think it's like the first time I pitched, it's just I don't know, throw yourself into it, make a few little voices, try and sell it. I put everybody else out of your mind as much as possible, but maybe listen for a laugh if you need a boost. If you get a laugh, that's like okay, cool, keep going, ride that energy because you need it.
Did you do a Clarence impression
I
when you
did.
pitched?
I did Clarence and sumos. I think like one time I actually like started a coughing fit trying to do sumo's voice because it's a yeah, it's such a strain on the throat. It's like I don't know, you know, those voice actors. Wow.
That's so true. That's so funny that you did the voices. I feel like sometimes, like, when I the first time I ever had to pitch my boards was when I moved here. It was on the Loud House, and everybody was like, dude, some of the people were like, some of the board voices were like doing all the voices of all the characters. And I was just like sweating. I was like, there's no way. I can't, like, I couldn't even relax. Like, I was like pitching so monotone at the beginning because I was like so scared.
All right, V, give us your best impression of all of the Loud House characters.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Every sister.
I can't even remember how to draw them. And I drew them for at least like 2 years and a half. So,
right? You can lose that muscle memory.
It's so crazy.
V's like, hi, I'm Lincoln. Hi, I'm Lori. No, hi, I'm Lenny. Hi, literally. I'm Lena. Hi, yes. it's me, Lynn Jr.
Oh, literally, yes. Even the nerd sister who's supposed to, because I don't know the tropes. Like, I guess it would be like this if I was the nerd, like Lisa.
I guess. Hey. This voice actor V is coming out. Well, look at you.
Stop. He's making fun of me.
No, I'm not. That was good.
Oh, yeah.
No, don't be embarrassed.
I feel like that's the lowest hanging fruit. And I'm like, no, okay, I'll just put intonation in it. That's what I'll do.
Well, that's the scary thing about pitching the boards, because that's something that I feel like doesn't get talked about enough, is especially in shows like this. Yeah, good job, you can storyboard. Can you sell your jokes? Because if you pitch your joke wrong, your joke will get cut. So you have to like pitch your jokes well, or else like it might just like fall flat, and then all your work gets thrown out the window just because of your performance even.
Yeah,
and that's kind of scary.
Yeah, that's I think that's why I'm like, I gotta try a voice, right? Yeah. Like, even if it's never gonna match like the voice actor stuff, but it kind of helps me like make sure I'm reading, I guess, in the tone of the character too correctly, if I at least try it, is how I thought.
Yeah. I feel like, and especially, and the timing, because I feel like for me, sometimes I wouldn't like really try to do the voice, but I would try at least eventually to get a sense of timing when I'm like flipping through the panels. Like, if it's an emotional moment, you kind of like slow down and you kind of like kind of take your time.
Yeah.
You know, like, and even if you can't do the voices, listen.
I remember, you don't have to
do the voices. I'm just saying that for people out there listening.
You don't like, have swear. To. Yeah.
You don't have to. I remember it backfiring actually a little bit when I was on Apple and Onion. I would try, you know, to impersonate their voices a little bit, and the creator was like, "You're making them sound too posh. He wouldn't say like, oh bother or something. I don't know, like because we were also pitching lines, and like, you know, and so I was, you know, writing they're doing like tricks with a water bottle or something, and it's like, this move is called Slippy Birthday, and like, and I'm like basically doing a voice that's like the creator's accent. and I was like, I gotta be a little careful when I'm doing this voice.
I have a confession. Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, I want to hear your confession first. That's more fun.
Yeah, like I also did like a freelance board for Apple and Onion, and that was like the exception to my rule. I'm like, I don't know if I could do the British accents well.
I tried my best, and I did get notes that were like, they wouldn't say this or this, like, you know, this slang or whatever. So you learn. I mean, honestly, there's definitely accents that you don't want to do, you know.
I think it's the hardest thing, right? It's like, you don't especially for me, because English is my second language, and there's like things that you're like, you can get like so in your head about like, oh, like would a character actually say this, or like, is this actually funny, or like, is this offensive, like, am I like accidentally being like really offensive right now? You know.
Mm-hmm.
That's like Yeah, no, it's like really scary.
Yeah, you have to just hope that it's a safe place to mess up, which is hard to do because it's also a place where you assume you can get fired. So and you know, balancing, you know, like everything being on the line with like, okay, like we're just a bunch of artists here. We're trying to get across a joke. We all want this thing to be good.
I'm trying to draw Jake, and it is absolutely impossible without a reference. Sorry. I'm like, this is driving me insane.
He's got such a unique face.
Oh my God.
It's the eyes, right? Like they got the that sort of.
Right? Okay, you guys have to like draw Jake for me so I can like copy
No,
it.
I don't even know. I don't know. Can I do it? I don't know if I can do it.
Oh, it's one of those like draw from memory, and I'm like, God damn it. Like, I can't. Okay, I cheated. I like looked them up. Okay, Jason has got Jake down. Wait, did you? So, were you? Did you do any boards for Adventure Time?
I have not.
Dude, your
I would
draws
love
are
to.
so good. I was like, man, you look like you've worked on that show.
Amber did for a little bit, like, and I used to visit the office all the time, because like I was on like Craig at the time, and they were working on I think some of the Distant Lands ones, I think that's what they're called.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, so cause so you've been at Cartoon Network like how long actually? Like how long were you there? Ooh.
I started there in 2014, and I think I was there. When did Craig end? I think Craig ended in 2020, either 2020 or 2021. I'm
Oh,
trying to remember. I think
really? I thought.
no, maybe it was 2022. It went for because we were there for a bit.
Yeah, did you work on any of the movies?
I did,
The
yeah. I worked on the Craig of the Creek movie. Yeah.
How was the
Yeah.
process different between the movie and the show and the TV show?
The movie, like, you know, it's a whole through line. Like, it's not just like a little 10 bit. So like we would get like portions at different spots, which is kind of fun. It felt like very similar to working on the show, but we had a little bit more freedom with the camera, and we had like 3D assets to work with because we had that the boat, like the big pirate ship.
Oh my God, that's.
Yeah.
Did you have to
So
learn Blender for that, or did you already kind of know 3D?
I think we had like a couple of little like Blender like knowledge. So like it was enough to where like I could like take a picture of the ship and like, you know, manipulate it. So like it was just like that starting, you know, that Blender knowledge, which is now like I think becoming like more like prominent as time goes on, like in animation.
I do feel like Blender, yeah, Blender is definitely like becoming, well, because it's free, so. It's becoming like a tool that you're kind of like required to use in a lot of
Yeah.
productions because they're doing a lot of 3D assets. Like even on the show that I'm on right now, it's a feature, and we just got like some models from VisDev, and it's like, all right, well, you can take some screenshots, or like you have to kind of go inside of it to kind of like see how you can do your layouts and stuff.
I have mixed feelings about it because I think that sometimes it can get overused, and then the board artists are doing things that the background artists might not be able to do. Like I feel like it makes an excuse for board artists to do a lot of animated backgrounds that aren't being carved out and planned quite as like it's yeah that maybe they're that part isn't being thought about, and I wonder what how much that costs productions. But
Yeah.
that's just a hot take for that's a little hot take for me.
Yeah, I think you got to be really like it helps to be like specific with what you want to do with it in your pipeline.
Unless the backgrounds do have 3D. You know what I mean? Like if that's the case, then I get it. But I see a lot of new boards where the camera is just moving the whole time, and like the people aren't designing like banana pans and like coming up with good like BG tricks where they're like helping the background artists out. It's just like redrawn backgrounds a whole lot. And I think that can get a little rough, or it forces the production into doing 3D backgrounds, which so I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. I think it's a really good tool, but I sometimes I wonder how if how much that is taken into account. Sorry to get up on my pedestal. I don't really have a pedestal about it. I was just I don't know. I don't know if I've said this that to anybody, but I've been feeling that.
Yeah, no, man, I feel you.
That's funny that you bring that up because I do. I mean, I feel like as a board artist, there's always moments when we like kind of like think about. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's a board artist thing or like a director thing or like what, but there's a moment when you start thinking about pipelines and how to like make things easier for everybody. Cause like it's true. Like if you do come up with too many backgrounds, or like if you have too many angles of the same shot, then you're just making like designs life harder. And I feel like that would be, I think that is the kind of stuff that should get streamlined from the supervising director if they can, and or the showrunner. But I feel like usually that would be the supervising director.
Usually my policy for doing those kind of like ambitious shots are like I'll ask the director. I'll say like, "Hey, I was thinking about doing like a POV thing here that's sort of experimental, animated backgrounds. Do we have the budget to do something like this? Or am I going to do all this work and then it's just going to get cut for budget or something like that?" And then they'll usually give me an honest answer.
Yeah, that's why like it's really good to have those like clear lines of communication, which like I feel like sometimes it can be more difficult, like as shows are more remote in general, like because just having like, because I don't know, when you're in house it's just like, hold on, I'm gonna take like 3 steps. Hey, is this okay? And then like if you're working all remote, it's like you gotta set up a meeting. Like sometimes you gotta wrangle the like a production assistant into setting up the meeting if you don't have the power to do that, or I don't know, everything feels a little bit more formal. I guess you can always like shoot a message, but sometimes you're like, ah, is it... I
That's
don't know.
true.
Conversations are good.
Especially if you're not like much of a texting person. I feel like for me, because I grew up on the internet, I'm like, I love just kind of like typing words, but I totally can see like how for a lot of people that like for a lot of people it's been kind of hard like remote, just because it's like what you just described, like, oh, it feels so formal and it's like all these extra steps that I don't have to think about when I'm like just there and I can just walk over. Let's see, we have like a ton of questions from our listeners. Do you want to get into some questions?
Sure, yeah.
I'm opening the file again because my computer was like, it's too much. I just realized for some reason, like when I opened it in Chrome, now it's fine. It's just
Weird.
Edge. Yeah, Edge was like, no, you can't do Jamboard in Edge. I guess this is what's going to slowly happen for anybody who's listened to the podcast for a while. Google Jamboard is going to end in October.
Our drawings are going to
And
look different.
yeah, I think Google is just like giving up on doing any kind of maintenance on Jamboard. So I think that's why like it's like not compatible with Edge anymore. All
Oh no.
right, so we're going to start.
Our drawings are going to start looking good, guys.
That's how it
Be
works.
prepared to, we're going to be unleashed. Basically, we've been spending this whole time with like weighted clothing training, and it's going to be that like Rock Lee or that like Piccolo moment where they take it off and it makes a crater when it hits the ground. Because we're going to be drawn with like magma, I think, next. And we have different brushes, we have layers, we have all kinds of stuff.
I
The
feel like
power.
it's too many options, but that is like a huge argument. Maybe that's gonna be like a spin-off episode where Sean and I just kind of get in a huge like fake fight about like why Jamboard is better than Magma.
I mean, you can argue about it as much as you want, but this is going away.
It's like a losing battle. But we do have questions from our listeners for Jason, and our patron Mallard asks you, Jason, what do you think the animation industry would look like in 5 to 10 years with it changing so much recently?
Ooh. I've been thinking or wondering like if we're gonna see a lot more like boutique kind of studios like Grackle and stuff like that. Just I don't know. It's a weird landscape that, like right now, so it's kind of hard to tell. But it's the companies kind of like consolidate and stuff looks like a little different. And I think there's gonna be a lot more like teams maybe from all over the place, kind of like how that is.
Like remote studios that, yeah.
Because the last thing I was on was fully remote, and I don't think they ever had any intention of having like a single, an office ever. So I wonder if we'll see more situations like that going forward.
Yeah,
Can
I
you
mean,
talk about what that was?
Oh, that was my experience on A24.
Ooh,
Oh,
very
shit.
cool, very cool.
Yeah.
Is that announced yet? Do you know? Are you allowed to talk about that?
I believe the title has been announced, and I don't think anything else. I think that's like number one, Happy Family USA.
Oh yeah. It's been announced because I've seen people talk about it online, and that's a script-driven show, right?
I believe so. Yeah. Like I when I came into the portion, I was a storyboard layout artist. So the actual
Oh.
like boarding stuff had been finished. So I was like, it was a lot of putting things like on model for
Oh.
like the animation studios, which is like a yeah. I was like, oh, I
Wait,
didn't
wait.
know
So
we.
it had a layout department. There's a lot of places that don't do that
Yeah, that was
anymore.
like a, I felt the same way. I'm like, oh, layout. That's unique. I didn't expect that. So that was a real unique experience. And we had like a pretty sizable layout team. I don't know how much of this I'm allowed to share, but yeah, I was storyboard layout.
Oh,
Layout was existed here.
That's
that
awesome.
is so awesome. Like, honestly, that makes me so happy because that is like my biggest gripe ever, where I'm like, oh, I can't believe like layout. I think for me, layout is the one part that I wish we got back in the pipelines because it else everything falls onto boards so much. Like then boards has to do so much we have to think about. And so hearing that there was like a layout department is just so nice.
Can we talk about the basics of layout, just for the people that are listening that don't know what layout is?
Yeah, so layout would be like, you know, you have the boards, you have like the rough like idea of where things would be, and layout is like that next step in the process where you're getting everything ready and about what you're going to actually see like on TV. So the characters are like on model. You're plugging in like the background that the background team made and putting everything in its like proper place. Like, so it's a lot more like clean, like a like finished drawings, I guess, in the process,
yeah.
Ideally.
There's a lot of productions where layout has been folded into the storyboard artist's responsibility, which is the it basically results in a lot of storyboard artists having to storyboard incredibly cleanly with a lot of key poses too, like key posing out every single step that they're making and making them very clean so that they can basically ship those boards overseas and the people overseas have exactly what they need to draw with no guesswork. But I miss layout, and I do it on the freelance projects. I do an abbreviated layout phase where I like before we move into animation, we have a keyframe artist put at least one finished drawing of all the characters in a scene, almost like a little snapshot with the background in. To make sure that the animators getting that shot have all of the information they need to before they start. And I think it helps unify it too a little bit.
Yeah, that helps a lot because I feel like you can easily get characters looking like too small or too big.
Right.
Yeah, if you don't have that little like snapshot layout like you were describing, Sean. Because it's so easy to just like even though you could draw it really clean in your boards, for if the background team just draws the background a little tiny bit differently, that can change things a lot when the animators like try to copy the poses from the boards.
Sometimes it's as simple as small of a change as the floor is slightly different, so the feet don't look planted anymore.
Yes.
Or if they make a little bit of a different path so that the character has to walk slightly differently or something like that.
Yeah. I actually try to storyboard as much as I can without any contacts, like feet on the floor, because it's such a hassle to animate, to draw. So...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all my scenes are in space, so they're all floating around. They don't have to make contact with anything. They're underwater. It's only underwater scenes for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're a floating specialist. Like, oh, you got a board with floating? You gotta call Sean. The best.
oh, no props. None of the characters need to touch anything. Okay, let's get Sean in here. I just got really good at like very slowly waving hair. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
So funny. Or like magicians, just like a guy doing spells. Just, like, telekinesis. It's like a very specific kind of board artist. This was I wondered.
If you were to describe the way you like I don't know if you are or not, but if you were to describe the way that your lane has been carved out as far as board specialty, what would you say is the way that you have gotten pigeonholed?
Well, I guess if you look at like the two shows I've been on the longest, like Craig and Clarence, like they are somewhat like, I guess they like grounded kids comedy, because they're both like kind of in real life, and as things, you know, do get kind of like fantastical and extreme at times, it feels like there's like still like an element of like, I guess, kids at play, maybe. That seems
kids
what
at
I
play?
Get.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
I
cool.
Think that's what a lot of the stuff I've done. I
but I remember seeing your boards, and I like that they have like an anime flair to them. Like you have like a very fun sense of like cinematic and like almost like an anime edge to your poses and shot choices, which is really cool.
Yeah, and I think that played really well in Craig, because like Ben is such a, like, you know, they're such big fans of anime, so there is like, you know, I think there's a little bit of like that in, I think, every person who works on Craig's boards is like a love of like anime style, like, I guess, cartooning.
It just leaks into it every once in a while. It's in some staging or like some subtle poses or something. It's like all of a sudden they're really dynamic. Yeah.
It's just like, this person, they were up in the Blockbuster renting VHSs at some point from the anime section.
I think that's an interesting way that storyboard artists end up finding their place. Like I feel like there are some crews where like a director will try to get a board artist who is really good at action, and then they'll have another board artist who they're like, you know, this is our funny guy, or like, you know, and I think that's interesting to talk about how we like end up kind of like falling into a, like, you know, unless you truly are a Swiss Army knife, you know what I mean? Unless you are, you know, can do a little bit of everything. I've been on crews where I was the person that, like, they had a scene that was boring or kind of sucked that they needed to make funny. Like, they're like, this scene isn't good. Can you make this phone call scene funny somehow? And that's where I would, that's like for a little bit, that's where I lived on that crew, like in doing that.
You were like the plus artist, like, we need the plusser. Get in here.
get the plusser. This scene is boring. They're just talking on Skype. Is there any way that we could make this scene better?
Dude, that's the thing. That's why like dialogue scenes, especially when you're like on a comedy show, are like kind of daunting for me sometimes, because it's like you have like a lot of dialogue and it's all exposition, and you're like, I can't just have these characters standing around and giving away all this exposition. You have to find like funny things to happen. Yeah, it's like, and sometimes it's like they're harder in that way. They're harder in the way that you have so much more creative work to do.
Yeah. And if you want to add something that, like, you know, won't be distracting too, is like right? Such a like a line to ride. Like, it can't take away from the scene.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Kind of like finding that balance of like, it's funny, but you're still paying attention to what's being said, so people aren't like, oh, I don't know what's going on.
I feel like I've worked on like one of the greatest examples of crazy things happening during a calm conversation shows, which is the Midnight Gospel. I feel like I've trained for that role where like they're having a calm conversation, but they're also trying to escape the White House and shoot zombies or whatever it is. And yeah, I feel like I've trained to be pigeonholed into that place.
That's so true. That episode was so good. I know you like, whenever you bring it up, I remember it, and I'm like, such a good, I think it's probably my favorite episode of Midnight Gospel.
Oh, that's
by the way,
awesome.
Except that I didn't watch the last one, so maybe the last one's better, but so far this is my favorite.
Were you not ready emotionally for the last episode?
Yeah, the last one's a real real heavy emotional one.
I think I was just like watching it with my boyfriend, and he was just kind of like, the show's just like, it's just like a lot.
Yeah, no, I will say, if you want, I that last episode is, I think, the episode that makes the show feel like it means something. like
Yeah,
overall,
everybody
like.
cried. I remember when people watched it and everybody was like, "Oh, it got me so hard." And they were like, "Ugh." Like in the feels. And they were like, so I was like, "Well, you know what? Maybe we just want to go back to King of the Hill for a little
I
bit."
mean, you don't always want to feel like that, but I think that every once in a while somebody's going through something similar, and it's almost like a therapy session a little bit, I think, about coping with loss. Not to take it to a, not to take this conversation to a sad direction, you know.
Yeah. No, that was a great show. That was a show. That was one of the shows when you're like, you know, wish I could work on that kind of thing.
That actually leads to that question that like I know a lot of the time we work on like funny stuff, we make goofs. Like, was there a time over your career or when you're working where you felt like you were working on something that meant more than just being like I'm working on a silly cartoon? Like, have you ever worked on an episode that was like that had something, a little something extra in it that you could feel?
Yeah, like from like you know, mean like a, like, you know, an emotional level, like, you know,
possibly. Mm-hmm. yeah so, something mm-hmm. where you're like, okay, this isn't just a silly cartoon anymore, this is like, this means something, this is going to affect somebody in some way.
Yes, I think one of the last episode I worked on Craig, it hasn't come out yet, so I can't say too much, but I think that that definitely hits that mark, like especially in a like an emotional and kind of tone.
Did that put more pressure on it, or were you like, I'm ready to give a little bit of something to this?
I think at the time, because, like, you know, we got that sort of, like, the like our season, our final season was kind of like order was cut in half, so I think like I was in the right kind of emotional headspace already to be kind of like tackling an episode with the same sort of themes, because, you know, we're dealing with you know, the show ending like kind of suddenly, so at that point I was just kind of there. And I don't know. I felt like I was already really there emotionally. So, like, doing the boards, like, yeah, this makes sense.
That's cool. Cause sometimes you have to get yourself to, I mean, and this goes for comedy too. There are many times when you have to push yourself to be in a headspace that you might not be feeling. Like, you have to, like, go in and you're worried about your cat going to the hospital and you have to write a funny joke that morning, or you have to, you know, you're in like a giggly funny mood and you're just being silly, but you have to write a scene where someone dies and there's a character crying. How do you get yourself there? Like, because this happens to everybody, you know.
I think it's like the, you know, you, we're old, we've gone through like a lot of like different experiences. You know, we're old enough to where we've gone through, like, you know, these kind of experiences, so we have a familiarity with like what that sort of headspace feels like. So it's just kind of like remembering, like, kind of recalling those moments and trying to make sure that those feelings are there, you know, with whatever you're creating, right?
Do you have like specific playlists or whatever? I know I have friends who are like, I gotta get my, I have like all my different moods and all these different playlists.
Oh man, speaking of devastating losses, I used to, I had an iPod that was with me since my high school, and it made it all the way into like me starting an animation, and then I, you know, you wash it.
an awful loss.
Yeah, so there was a time, and now I just have to make do with my headspace. But yeah, I used to have, like, you know, all those playlists and everything kind of curated just so for so long, and now it's just like, well, I don't know. Spotify sad playlist. What's sad these days?
That's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost like a nuanced way of asking how you get through creative block, but it's more of like a ways that you can emotionally shift or control your emotions. So like because you work on probably more funny things, how do you get yourself into funny joke 'em up mood.
I think the best part of that, like especially back when we were in the office more, is just you're in a space with a lot of funny people.
True.
So, you know, like you have a moment, you just kind of like, I don't know, stop by someone's office, have a conversation. It's very easy to like get bits going, especially on like the Clarence and the Craig cruise. Like it's just spend a moment with some of the people around you. There's someone's, you're bound to, you know, make them laugh and they're bound to make you laugh eventually. Like someone's going to do something. I don't know. Animation's full of silly people.
That's good advice. Draw on the energy of the people that are around you.
I wanted to kind of piggyback off the conversation we were having before, like on the episodes that, you know, like you felt very connected to, because on Twitter, Little Evergreen One asks, what's your perfect project to work on in a dream industry? Blue sky. Pie in the sky.
I think like my dream project is like, it's gonna come down to like the team, you know, like especially after like this kind of long, you've been in on so many different kind of projects, like even like the toughest one, like if it's like a team that really can I don't know, pull together and get along, like you can get through it, like as long as the people you're with like are, you know, great and not adding to that stress. So I think my perfect project is just going to be full of like, you know, funny, collaborative, like thoughtful people that are like really going to make the experience of making the show like a, you know, a joy.
Do you if there was like all the people from Craig of the Creek going on to a project, would that be kind of pretty much your
I'm not gonna lie, I'd be very excited to go on to a project again if it had a lot of the same people, because I had a lot of my favorite people were on that crew, a lot of people I still like kind of hang out with on the regular.
Little Evergreen One also asked, do you have a quote-unquote North Star creatively, like a mission statement or core memory that keeps you going? I like how deep these are.
Ooh, yeah. I think that's Danica, right? Danica's also like an incredible board artist. Getting really to the root of everything. And I think like, I guess North Star is like, I guess I just want to make, I love doing this and I want to keep doing this. And I think it's just like reminding myself that I want to make stuff that whatever the themes kind of help us connect, I guess. You know, whether it's through like humor, like through, you know, like dealing with like loss together or things like that. But I like people, and I think like anything that kind of helps, like, you know, the team and like, or the like the people watching the show kind of connect with it in some way. I guess connection, maybe.
I like that. That's so sweet. Yeah,
human connection.
Yeah, especially now. I don't know, I feel like I read online a lot of like articles are like people are lonelier and it's just like the loneliness epidemic or whatever, so I do feel like that's very relevant for like, I mean, according to what the internet tells me, it's relevant.
The internet could be lying.
I know, you never know. I'm like I don't know what to believe in anymore.
I think there's a lot of people that are lonely, sure.
Yeah, and I think like every time, like, you know, I'm always, especially now, like when I can't just run into people regular, I'm always like a little bit like, I don't know, I don't want to bug somebody. But every time I've like kind of reached out, I'm like, this is great, I should do this more. It was really good to like talk to like my friends again.
Yeah.
But you know that they're just doing the same thing that you're doing, where they're like, oh, I don't want to bug anybody. And yeah, they're all just thinking at the same time, and they all want to hang out, but everyone's so shy.
Exactly. It's just like you gotta just quiet that part of yourself and like send a text, make a phone call, just be like, hey, let's hang out. Hanging out used to be so easy. Like I was constantly the like at someone's house or someone was at my house, like growing up, like almost every day. It's interesting when you get older and like it's just, that's not just happening normally all the time, regularly. You have to set it up.
Yeah, that's funny that you say that, because we have from Instagram, Derek Malik Johnson, who asks, how you doing, bud? Hope you're well. And I have to ask, but What's your method in drawing personal storyboards? I love that it takes a podcast for him to reach out to you.
It's like
You
there's a
could.
messenger pigeon, like we're in
Yeah.
messenger podcast.
Hey, yeah, I'm doing good. I hope you're doing well too, bud. Feel free to reach out whenever. But yeah, especially now that like the cat's like doing better. But yeah, I guess for personal stuff, like I do, I don't know if you guys ever do this, but I feel like I start a lot of things and I'm never happy with it right away. So I just like, I'll start something, leave it, and then I'll come back to it later. And I feel like when I'm doing like personal stuff, just like kind of hit, something that I feel in the moment, and then eventually it'll like the good feeling will go away, and I'll move on, and I just try to like revisit and come back to things, and just I pick at I think when in my personal drawings and personal boards, I just yeah I set it, forget it, and then I come back to it later, and then like oh yeah, I don't hate this anymore. I'm gonna keep working on this.
That's so interesting. That's funny that you, yeah, like I do feel like that is a very, that's very real. When you're like working on something personal and you're like have like a lot of these like questions, you're like, I don't know if this is good, I hate it, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like now for me having like a web comic, I'm like, well, I just have to finish it. So like there are moments where it's like agonizing because I'm like, I hate this arc or I hate this page and everything I'm drawing is so terrible. But I'm like, I have to keep pushing through.
Yeah,
So
because you have like a schedule and stuff.
the schedule is not like, I don't get paid for it, so I can do whatever I want. But I do want to finish it, is the thing. That's the only real thing that keeps me to my work.
Well, I mean, you also have a viewer base that keeps up with it and likes it, and that's also another motivator. Is like
Yes.
once you get other people invested in your idea, then it's bigger than you. Then it's like people are asking about it, and you don't want to let people down, and
Yeah, 100%. And I guess I was just, yeah, I was just kind of reacting to the fact that like I used to I relate to like the like, oh, I hate this, I don't want to like show this to anybody, I like put it in a little corner and not
sure.
look at it. But yeah, it's funny too. But I feel like sometimes, we're really hard on ourselves and then it's
Yeah.
actually not so bad,
Exactly. That's why you just gotta like, leave it alone for a bit and then look at it again and be like, oh, yeah, you know what? I was really mean. This is fine. I'm gonna post
Exactly. I feel like we have other. I kind of want to like lump in a couple of questions that are kind of about like process of storyboarding because we have from Twitter, Top Hat Geo, who asks, would love to know if you have any favorite tricks or secrets about storyboarding. Is there anything you do which makes your job easier?
Ooh, I think that's probably going back to like the non-linear way of jumping around, right? Like that, I think that was like the big like jump for me. It was like, you know what? Just hit what feels good. Hit what is clear to you first, and then yeah, like solve the rest as you go. Like it just yeah.
Is there
Things don't
anything you do that makes your job harder?
no.
that you know that you do, but you're like, but I want to do it.
Yeah, I remember I was talking to like my friend the other day who would revise my stuff, and they would like tell me, why are you carving out your lines? Like that's what I would get when you're bored. Like I would erase and like carve out lines, and they're like, this is a storyboard. You don't need to be doing that. And I'm like, you're right.
That's so funny. When you say carving out the lines, do you mean like you're drawing lots of like little lines to make a big line? Is that what it is?
Yeah, like I'll draw like I'll go over it for a bit, and then like I'll erase and like there we go, yeah, that's nice. And it's like, you don't
That's
need to
the
be doing that.
ticket.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes when you're doing like a three quarter one, you just like, yeah, I gotta look real nice,
So true. At Comment Mint is asking from Twitter, in any way or amount, has drawing as a career ruined drawing for yourself?
I think it's had the opposite effect. I feel like it's made me more disciplined in like drawing for myself. Like at least like now, like I'm just like I'm kind of, I feel like I'm getting over like one of those art block bits, and I'm like a little bit more like, yeah, you know what? I can just finish this. I can do it. Whatever. So I think like, having to, hit deadlines for, oh my God, how long has it been? I started in 2014. It's 20, almost 10 years, like a
Yep.
work. Just like I think it's actually made me a little bit more disciplined in finishing what I start.
That's actually a really awesome answer. I do feel like that's so true. I feel like, I don't know, like you were saying, the amount of work we have to churn out, eventually it doesn't seem as daunting anymore to just do like an illustration. I don't know. I feel like I remember being in school and being like, oh, this is like very anxiety inducing to do an illustration. But now we like draw so much that it's like, meh.
Yeah.
Building up your tolerance.
Exactly, yeah.
Commitment also asks, do you have suggestions for jobs that are not in the industry while still being great for artists?
SeaWorld.
Yeah, oh yeah. Honestly, 'cause I worked at like in SeaWorld, I would work at like some of the rides. I would work at like some of the gift shops, and I would spend a lot of time because there's like dead time, and I think like any job, like there's just, you know, there is periods where there's not much to do, and I think that's even how drawing started for me is like, well, I'm gonna draw. Like nothing's going on, I'm gonna draw. I'm in school, someone's trying to teach me, I'm gonna draw.
I'm going to ignore them and draw.
I'm going to know them draw. Yeah, but it's like I think whatever career you have, if you have a passion for drawing, like you just can't help it. You find a little space to do it somehow. Like not even like on a rising grind type of way. It's just like, oh, they got me doing it again. Ah, shoot.
No.
I need to go get another roll of receipt tape. Sorry, Shamu. I've used it all. I drew a bunch of little guys here.
That's so true. That's so true. I do feel like if you really, I do feel like if you love it, if you love drawing enough, no matter what you end up like doing as a career, like you're gonna be drawing anyway, you know? Like if it's like that passion, you're just kind of like, it's just easy to do. Just like
Yeah.
SeaWorld is probably a good place to do plein air watercolor because you don't have to bring the water. You just sit where it's going to be wet and you just have a little paint.
You're like catching the droplets as they fly by for you.
Can you please stop dipping your brush in the aquariums or in the pool? I know you're trying to rinse your brush. I saw you rinsing your brush in the seal enclosure.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, is that why the seals are just that much more colorful than usual?
The seals are green. What kind of Legend of Zelda art have you been doing,
It's like,
Drone
oh,
Link?
sorry. You don't like whimsy, huh? You don't want a little wonder in the world?
Let me do my thing.
At Amber Blade Jones
Oh my
asks,
gosh.
yeah, they have a lot of great questions. What do you believe is the most important quality of a successful storyboard artist?
I think it's like that ability to collaborate, right? Like I know we kind of like disappear into our offices and get things done at a certain point, but and I think every instance, like you're being able to like play well with others, you know, whether it's like your board partner or your directors and everything, like I think that's like really helpful because, you know, then you're not alone in this process.
Yeah, that's really great because it kind of goes into the next question they ask. So still Ember Blade Jones, who asks, how do you incorporate feedback from multiple sources while maintaining the integrity of the story?
Well, I think it's helpful in a lot of the like shows I've worked on is like everybody thankfully has that same goal. I haven't been to a point, I'm sure, like where, you know, executive notes kind of come in and like really change stuff up. I think that's like probably like where you'd see more of that kind of thing, right? Where it's like, ah, oh, this kind of really changes things. I remember early on when I was just, this wasn't my episode, but when I was just joining Clarence, they had just finished an episode called Fart Cactus, and it was it you know, one I for I won't say which region, but one region thought there was far too many farts. Just they've really pushed it to the limit. We gotta cut down on the number of farts, and then because you know it was
There's someone with like one of those little counters, like just sitting there, like nope, it's reaching the threshold.
Yeah. I just thought that was like this. I mean, this it's a story about like Clarence who makes a little comic about with a cactus that farts, and it's about him being censored, so
That
because it
is
gets
so
out of hand.
funny.
And yeah, it's just really funny to like, wow, yeah, like, but I just remember that was the thing Spencer was like tackling when I like first like, well, I think like the first couple of days I was like at the studio, and God bless him making sure that that got all the way through intact. So I bet he would have some really good answers to that question.
That's funny. That's funny that yeah, it kind of it depends on the show and also kind of depends on the team, on the execs, on so many different kind of like parameters whether or not you'll have to like tackle some of that stuff. Because we've definitely been on a I've definitely been like on Thundercats Roar and we had like a giant mecha episode and we like pretty much were like almost done with the animatic, like with the episode, and then one of the execs was like, I don't know. We are having too many giant mecha episodes right now. Can you just like change it? It's like literally like the, what the episode's about.
Oh my God.
It's like literally like,
Oh
yeah. So
and that wasn't
it's
easy to
like,
draw. That's a giant mecha.
yeah.
You had to do a whole episode
Yeah, there's like multiple characters in the mecha. Like it's like this whole thing.
for
Oh my God. It's like, yeah. I mean, there was like some politics that you know eventually kind of like are involved, and people are like, "Come on, please,
Yeah.
it's a
Yeah.
little
Yeah,
bit late."
who gets to push their mecha episode through? Who do I
Yeah.
have to?
Yeah. Oh
Oh
my
God.
God. I like this other question that Ember asks. How do you ensure that your storyboards contribute to the overall vision of the project?
I think that comes down to like once again lines of like communication, like you're making sure like before, especially if you're gonna take like, because sometimes it's wor really worth it to take a big swing. Because you're like, I my gut's telling me that this might be the way to go. And like if you have a good relationship with like your showrunners or like your directors or something, like I think it's good to like just to make sure everything's in the right direction, you know, ch being able to check in and like have that sort of like, hey, let me know if I'm off base. And like and then I think you can like, you know, feel more confident in doing that kind of stuff. Right? I think. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great answer. Yeah, I do feel like especially because shows can have like such a different style from a show to another. And like when you're adapting, there's like that moment when you're definitely like trying to figure out like, okay, what's the humor on this show? What are the kind of jokes that my showrunner and or director like? Like what's the kind of yeah, that does take a minute. I feel like we have some great questions from Captain.Mycelia from Instagram and Cornelia underscore doodles, but we'll just end on this question from at Freeglass, which is, what's been a big challenge for you in boarding and what was your main takeaway and lesson you learned from it?
I think one of my big challenges boarding was especially like when I was coming into boards initially, and I was like, you know, taking all these classes and building stuff out, like my portfolio, I was coming at it from like a feature perspective, which
Oh,
is
I
like what a
see.
lot of my teachers did and stuff. So I think like my big shift was like making sure what I was doing was right for TV initially. Like, and I think a lot of it comes down to it, like, remember when you were talking earlier about like contact points and stuff like that, and just I think understanding like anything that's like, you know, like I'm ha like, you know, it's challenging like for me to do like on this kind of like deadline, it's gonna be like amplified like tenfold for the animators who get it later. So I think like early on, you know, making that shift to like being more like economical with my like choices and like being like more thoughtful with that, I think was like a really like good kind of lesson to instill in myself, especially when working with TV.
Yeah, it's tough to learn the. I feel like, yeah, it's tough to learn being like economical with boarding because I don't think there's any place that kind of teaches that. Like a lot of the classes, like you said, it's like either feature or more kind of like cinematic or anime. But it's like so kind of surprising to see that there's, I don't know, like the skill of like boarding kind of like economically is kind of like hard to find. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess we can like kind of like slowly kind of wrap up with our we were kind of like touching on it before, but like we love to ask our guests if you experience creative block, and if you do, what does it feel like, and how'd you get over it?
Yeah, I mean, I think every artist has just hit that point where it's like there's no gas in the tank, like especially if you've like been going in a job, like you're going at it for a bit. And I think it's like, good to, set things down, like maybe like a go back to kind of like looking at or like engaging with art that like really got you fired up in the first place to be making things. And like a lot for me is like going back to what I like was talking about before is like, do a little thing, like once it's gone, just leave it. You can come back to it later. Like you just nothing has to be, if you're in a block, like immediate, just, you do it for you. Like do it until it's like not fun, and then move on, and then just keep that process going, and like come back or like start again or like re-engage with things at your pace.
That is like so emotionally mature. I love this. And sir, it's like so like in tune with your feelings, and I think it's like the best, honestly, like the most healthy way to go about it, honestly. That is like such a great answer. Well, is there anything that you want to plug? Maybe are you working on anything, or like your social media?
Yeah, my I think my Instagram is just my full name. I think it's just Jason McRae Dwyer, and my no, it's Jason M Dwyer is my Instagram, and my Twitter is Nubsy3D. I'm open to any sort of opportunities. I love boarding, and I don't know if you ever if you have a love for fighting games, maybe hit me up.
Man, was so great. That was so fun to hang out. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And that's the end of this creative block. Jason, thanks for being our guest and sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was such a blast, like catching up and like, yeah, getting like to hang out and answer a few questions.
And thank you also from me. And I want to give a quick thanks to our listeners. Follow us on social media at CRTV Block, where we ask for drawing prompts and questions to ask our guests. Huge thanks to our editor Clements for editing the podcast, Marco for helping us produce the show, and Abuka for creating the short clips that we've been putting out.
If you love our show, you can support us on Patreon. Becoming a patron gets you early access to interviews and access to our Discord community. You can also support us by just interacting with our content, like, subscribe, follow, all that good stuff. It helps the algorithm push our content up, and that helps us grow. So click the link in the description of this episode to follow Jason on all his social media and to check out our Patreon. I've been your host, V.
And I was Sean. Keep being creative, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.